Welcome to episode 138 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jen. This week we watch Teen Titans: The End. And now the cast begins.
Okay, everybody, welcome to another Trigonic episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with David.
Hey.
And Jen.
Hey.
And this week, we're wrapping up our Teen Titans series with three episodes of the animated show. So we watched The End, was the name of all three parts, but it's parts one, two, and three. It's a three-episode series. That's the last three episodes of season four, where Raven's destiny is fulfilled, and her father comes to Earth in our dimension to ruin fucking everything.
Hey, Andy.
Yeah.
What's Trigonic mean?
It means like Trigon.
So people four-eyed? So like people with glasses?
Yeah. It's for evil glasses wearing people. Are they Trigonic?
So hipsters are Trigonic then.
Damn Trigonic.
Yeah, that
hipsters.
Sounds right.
That's a good definition. I know that.
Okay, so did you guys like the show?
Yes, I was actually going into it thinking I wouldn't like it because I'm grumpy and tend not to like animated shows that are targeted clearly at a younger audience.
Yeah, this is clearly a younger audience too.
But oh man, it was like really surprisingly good, so I'm quite pleased that we watched this. I'm happy.
Yeah, and even this is clearly targeted to a younger audience, but I like that even if you're older, it doesn't come off as eye rolling. It just comes off as fucking adorable.
For yeah, me, that, anyway. That's what's cool is like when they make shows that are targeted at kids, they can like make it cute in like a sickening way sometimes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But in this way, it was like the cuteness came off as like funny. As funny, like the jokes and stuff, they're not really, because I know some cartoons, they kind of hide jokes and humor there for adults. They didn't do this in this show, but they made the jokes and at least the, like, I'm using the air quotes here, physical comedy of the show was done in such a way that it's funny in to a wide audience.
Yeah, it's funny to kids and for you, you kind of roll your eyes a little bit, but it's like, okay, it's. It tells the story in a way that's effective, and it's kind of, it's cute.
Yeah. It strikes a very good balance.
You know, the first comic that we read, we commented that like some of the characters came off as plain old annoying and quippy.
Uh-huh.
But here, even though there were lots of quips and jokes, I didn't find like Beast Boy to be annoying at all. And I didn't find the quippy dialogue to be grating. I thought it was well integrated, and as you know, you guys said it's cute.
Yeah, God, you know what, though? I come back, it's those nicknames. I keep coming back to those. Like, it wasn't a big deal when I was reading that one, but then David convinced me while we were talking about Judas Contract that was what was really annoying with that writing. And now, watching this, I'm like, you're saying this is so similar, and I'm like, oh yeah, this is really similar. What did they not have? Oh yeah, stupid fucking nicknames all the goddamn time.
Well, I think the reason why that not just the nicknames, but the quips and stuff. I think the reason they work in the cartoon is because I think the difference is when Judas Contract was written, and I'm kind of speculating here, the writers were trying to force their idea of what teenagers act like into a very serious comic. Well, the storyline was pretty serious. I mean, it had to do, like, you know, the whole thing with Slade and Tara was creepy and off-putting and stuff.
Very much so.
But here, all the quips and stuff were related to the conversation and the dialogue that was happening at the time. It just fit in really seamlessly, whereas in Judas Contract, it really took me out of the dialogue.
Yeah, and you know what? This is also probably an instance where art style matters more than we thought it did with Judas Contract. Like, mm-hmm. Judas Contract, we talked about it there and why it didn't fit. And now that we're talking about it again and why it fits here, I'm thinking because stupid, silly quips don't work with that more, like, traditional art style that's not animated or illustrated feeling. It's just comic book art. But this is animation to the extreme. This is, like, super cartoony animation. So here, when they get quippy and crack each other, like, whatever, it's fine. It's an animated cartoon. The art style already puts you in the mood to accept that.
Here's an interesting thing, right? So George Perez did the art for Judas Contract, right?
Yeah. And
George Perez was a huge... He's still a huge name in comics, right?
Yeah, I mean, he...
But he was huge, huge in the 80s in particular. And so he wrote this comic where he had a very recognizable art style. Mm-hmm. He still does today.
Yeah.
And so when I think about what kind of things was George Perez working on in the 80s, the first thing that comes to mind is Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yeah.
And that is a comic where the characters and the art style and the whole atmosphere set up by this artist is the same. But we don't get that kind of forced quippiness and weird pet names and slang that is very, very closely related with the 80s and late 70s, you know?
Yeah, and I think...
To go back to what you were saying about the art style is, if you're a DC Comics reader and you read Crisis on Infinite Earths and you think back, okay, this is what a George Perez book is like. The atmosphere there is very dark. And then you have the same atmosphere in a book like New Teen Titans, where it's kind of a mixture of two different things, this like forced comedy, but the serious nature of the story, it kind of doesn't work. But when you go and you watch the Teen Titans cartoon, the art really lets you know, okay, this isn't drawn like Batman, the Batman animated series, where there's dark backgrounds, and I think they used like black paper.
Yeah, and a very, very distinct Art Deco style that lends itself towards that as well.
But here, and even from the very get-go, you get the theme song for Teen Titans.
I fucking love the theme song for this show.
And it's cool. It's a great theme song, and it's very appropriate for that show. But when you think about the music for like Batman the Animated Series, it's very serious and dramatic. There's no lyrics. And so all these things work together to communicate to the reader or watcher exactly what they're getting themselves into. And if you don't set that up in the right way, it can be jarring when you get to, you know, not necessarily unexpected things, but things that kind of are jarring, like these weird nicknames in Judas Contract, because, you know, I was reading along and everything was okay, and then I'd see somebody say something. I can't even think of a good example.
Green jeans.
Green jeans, yeah. It's like, okay.
Metalhead.
Maybe. Maybe.
Oh, yeah. Maybe. Yeah.
But you know, like you said, Andy, all these things work together to let the watcher know what they're getting into. So then it's not a jarring experience when something silly pops up.
And you know, we're talking about Perez and Wolfman and that Judas Contract and all the things that didn't work. But I think we should point out that in that run with those two creators, those are the people who created Trigon. And who created this rich backstory for Raven that wouldn't exist without them. Like,
well, yeah. I mean,
whatever does or doesn't work in that comic, they were really good in that run, and they did a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
Credit where it's due for that, you know?
And you know, the Wolfman-Perez run was called New Teen Titans, but the cartoon that we watch is called the cartoon's called Teen Titans, but it is really, it's the lineup from New Teen Titans.
That lineup is considered, like, like, you know how, like, what is it? When they did, like, the new X-Men, way back when they added Nightcrawler and Iceman.
Colossus,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the team that people think of when they think of the X-Men. They don't really necessarily think of the original X-Men. Not everybody thinks of Beast, but he was a founding member, you know? But this, the same thing is happening here with Teen Titans, which is funny because in the intro to Judas Contract, they said stop comparing us to X-Men. But I'm going to do it again. That New Teen Titans, that lineup is today considered the definitive Titans. Like, that's what the team looks like when it's at its best.
Yeah, because I think the original Teen Titans was like Aqualad.
Yeah.
It was Robin.
It was just like all the Super Friends sidekicks.
Yeah, it was Dick Grayson, right?
Yeah.
It was Dick Grayson, Aqualad, Wonder Girl.
Kid Flash, right?
Kid Flash, yeah. That was the team. Those four. Yeah. But here, like in the cartoon, even though it's called Teen Titans, we really are getting the new Teen Titans. And like you said, Andy, it's entirely appropriate because that's what most people think of when they think of the Teen Titans. And it's totally justified.
Yeah.
Even though I was kind of ragging on Judas Contract there, that was really just a small part of the story. I did like that story. I think I gave it a 3.5 when we rated it.
There are things that are wonky in there, but it's a good book.
Yeah, overall, it's definitely... The story stands the test of time, you know?
Yeah.
So,
speaking of Trigon, what did you guys think of him?
I kind of wish we got more of him.
Yeah, he didn't do anything. I mean...
I thought he was baller as fuck using the Titan's Tower as a chair.
That was good.
Yeah, okay, so when I say that I wish we got more of him, it's because I liked what we did get.
Yeah.
And, you know, the big bads like that in comics are always cool. Characters like Galactus, Anti-Monitor, you know, these masterminds that are literally larger than life and, you know, and... They're these immensely, immensely powerful beings that, even though they're such complete badasses, sit in the background and let their minions do the work. And those kind of characters are always interesting. So what that makes me want to do, I really liked, I really liked him in this comic. I want to go find out more about Trigon.
Yeah, and his backstory is friggin' awesome, too. The way that, well, not his backstory, but the way that Raven comes from him. Is really cool. I haven't read that comic. I just read Wikipedia, and I'm like, I want to read that comic. That sounds messed up and awesome, and I want to read that. But we get the resolution here, as opposed to that intro part, which I think we can just dive right into it. What did you guys think of the kind of dynamic between Raven and Trigon?
The end of it where she goes berserk on him was so good.
So satisfying, right?
Yeah.
And I feel this was so timely because, you know, we're reading this, like, what, just a week ahead of time for Father's Day?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
This is our Father's Day episode. Kill your dad.
She outlined so well what a father should be. And then I appreciated that she also said, like, you know, the monks protected me and my friends raised me. She knows where the good things in her life come from and acknowledge that. And, you know, earlier they say her power comes from her emotions, and like everything she said was so emotional. Like, God, every episode, my personal notes that I wrote down for them were like so many feels. Yeah, and her, it's just because of her. And, you know, kudos to her voice actress.
Yes.
Same one who did Bubbles for Powerpuff Girls, actually.
Interesting.
But Tara Strong, I think. But damn, like, really good job with the writing and the acting on that. And I just, like, every time Raven was saying something emotional, I was just, like, super engaged. So I loved it when she verbally beat down Trigon while physically kicking his ass.
Word. I don't know. I really liked, I think there were two big metaphors going on with Raven and Trigon, and the one that I think is more overt is kind of the fact that he embodies all the negative things in her, and maybe she channels those things to draw power from, right? Like her power is based on emotion, you know? And I think the other members of the team, like when they realized they had some of her power, the first thing they did is they said, let's get angry, right? And you have to imagine it's probably the well that she pulls from all the time, right? Like, I'm going to get angry at my lot in life. I'm going to get angry at this prophecy. I'm going to get frustrated at my situation. And she draws power from that. But at this point, once he's crossed into this dimension and conquered everything, she doesn't have that power anymore. I think that's when Robin finds her, she's like a little kid wearing that white costume. Like, that frustration doesn't – there's no reason for that to exist. There's no reason for the anger to exist because you let it happen. You chose this, you know? And so she lost all of that that fight in her. And I think it's interesting to see her go on that journey against her father to find a different well of power for herself that comes from herself and her friends as opposed to him. Like, she kind of detaches her power from him, even though, you know, maybe biologically or whatever, her power set comes from him. Like, but the strength that drives it no longer comes from that interaction. And that, like, freedom from the father was a really cool theme in this.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, that they actually had her open up the portal. Because I kind of was wondering if they'd take it in the direction of, you know, they convince her that anything's possible, you can hope, and then she doesn't have to do this. But she died in a way, right? And was reborn. And it's really interesting because in her rebirth, she made herself not in her father's image, where we see that very literal parallel when we see her flashing eyes, for instance, in the first episode. And it's just, it's, I think, really, how do I want to put it? The theme of these three episodes was hope, I think, in a lot of ways. Hope that you can change who you are, hope that things will just be better, which is what Robin shows, you know, hope that your friends will be able to overcome their own problems. And I think the way that she reformed herself in her own image, you know, with friendship or love maybe as something that gives her a lot of hope and backing, was just a really nice kind of, especially as a season finale, it's a good positive note to end on.
Yeah, definitely. I think, and then, so I said there was two themes with Raven and her father, and I think the other theme is a little bit less overt and might have been targeted to a slightly different audience. I don't know how to explain it exactly, but I think a character like Raven, who's very emo, very dark, likes to focus on the bad things in the world. I think if you target the show to younger kids or to teens, the people that you're going to get that attached to that maybe are the ones who are having a hard life themselves, right? And so I think it's really important that there's kind of a metaphor that you can build here, a storyline that you can build of Raven in this three-parter breaking the cycle of abuse from her father. I mean, her father was an absentee father. Her father was abusive to her once she discovered her purpose, you know? And, like, he straight up tells her, like, your purpose is nothing except to serve my will, right? And when that doesn't happen, he mistreats her and kills her, basically, you know?
And he only comes around when he wants something from her, not because
not because he wants her for anything. He just, like, wants her to do something for him. And I think it's set up subtly, and you see kind of his demons growing in her. And when you see, like, as you mentioned, Jen, the parallel with her eyes, you know, like, you see him growing in her. And I think it's interesting that we're able to, through this cartoon, almost show that it is possible if you focus and work and rely on your friends and use your support structure that you can break the cycle that you're in, you know? And I think that's a really important message that's really subtle in here, but I think it is in there if you want to look for it. And I think it's really cool that it's there.
Yeah, and I think just in addition to that, it's also that no matter what life throws at you, you can always make the choice to be a good person. And that's what being a hero is. And that's what it is to be brave and to help people. You know, you just choose to be good and then you work on that. And that's what she shows us, because for a long time, she was choosing to give in and bad things happened. Mm-hmm. And Robin convinces her, like, hey, no, you don't have to do this. And it works.
Yeah.
So that's also, like, really hopeful too.
Yeah. And I love that they were an example for her. Like, no, I don't care how screwed we are. Fight. Fight. And then, like, then she sees, like, oh, it does work sometimes. Sometimes they are hurting him. What do you know? It was really cool.
A thing that you just reminded me of was how when Robin finds her, she's a child, like a very small child.
Yeah.
When she stops and realizes that she can fight Trigon, she suddenly, like, morphs into a young adult again, or, like, a teen. And that was interesting, just because it was really symbolic of her becoming part of the team again, right?
Yeah.
Because they're not... Oh, God, they were also, like, really young in this, compared to in Judas Contract, and that surprised me. But... they're not the kid titans, you know, just like Spider-Man is not Spider-Boy.
Yeah.
They're the teen titans, and that's who they are. And when she's a teen, she is literally a member of the team again, if we want to go by, like, namesake or title.
Yeah. So what... I mean, they're both called teen titans, but what do you think of their general age level in this cartoon versus in the comic?
So much more appropriate.
I mean, do they feel younger here?
I think they feel really young, especially Beast Boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Beast Boy. Totally agree.
Yeah, he's a kid. I felt like it was age appropriate in the New 52. It really actually bothered me how old a lot of them were in Judas Contract. Because I was kind of like, you're not teens, stop dressing up, go be real heroes. Or do something, you know, get a job.
Get out from under Batman's shed already, will you?
Yeah.
I don't think it really matters in, like, in this show how old they are. Like, I remember, I think we've mentioned this before, but when Andy and I were at Comic-Con in 2010, somebody asked Grant Morrison how old Batman is. Do you remember that, Andy?
Yeah.
And he said it doesn't matter. And I think in, and I totally agree with that, and I think in this case, that's definitely true, because the team is set up in such a way with the personalities and stuff of the characters, whatever the age of the character is, they're relatable and to different people in the audience.
Mm-hmm.
Like you guys, we talked about how Raven shows that you can improve your situation by relying on your support group. So we get this character who's rising up, you know, pulling herself up out of a bad situation. We get the goofy kid, LaClasse clown in Beast Boy. We get the serious kind of person in leadership type character in Robin. So, you know, that's why I think that even though this cartoon is certainly geared towards children or a younger audience, it's enjoyable to anybody, like to any age group, because of it's kind of got, you know, even though these characters are teens or even a little bit younger, as the case may be, they're kind of universal character archetypes that anyone can relate to.
Yeah.
I actually read up on the show after watching these three episodes because I was so interested. And on Wikipedia, it was really interesting. The creator in some interviews states that that's exactly what he was aiming for, too, because he wanted kids to be able to look at them and say, like, you know, that's the one I relate to. So, for instance, that's why we never get their real names. We never see them out of costume. They're just these archetypes. They're just these molds that other people can step into.
Yeah, you know, I didn't even notice that they don't call each other Tim or Coriander or Vic. Huh.
And it's actually, I guess it was a bit under debate which Robin we were dealing with, although I guess evidence does point to the fact that it's Dick Grayson in this one.
Yeah, the costume's more like Dick Grayson's.
Huh. I kind of always assumed it was Tim Drake in this for some reason. I don't know why.
I didn't think it was Dick Grayson, but then people who had watched the whole series pointed out, I guess they show him in like a flash forward as Nightwing. Or something.
There's also the relationship between him and Starfire in the show.
Yeah, that's true.
And they get married in the comics.
You know what? I think now that I kind of think back, I felt like he was Tim Drake is because this show came out a little bit after the Batman animated series ended, and that series ended with Tim Drake as Robin. And they have the, I don't know if the costume design is exactly the same, but there's a, the colors are similar, because this, the Robin in this show doesn't have a lot of green. He's a lot of black, yellow, and red. And yeah. Tim Drake Batman in the cartoon was, in the Batman cartoon, was the same color scheme. So I think maybe that's why my mind went in that direction. But yeah, I think it's definitely pretty clear that it's Dick Grayson. And that seems particularly appropriate now that it seems like this is definitely the new Teen Titans.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is cool, though, because, I mean, just like, you know, the question with Batman's age, I think in here it doesn't matter if it's Dick Grayson or Tim Drake or Jason Todd. It can be any of them. It could be anybody. And that's okay, because who they are isn't the point. It's how you relate to them.
Mm-hmm.
So. I think that's a really good trait for a kid's show.
Yeah. I like it's very nice that it's done subtly well. So what do we think about the character design then from the comic versus the cartoon?
It's so hard to compare.
Is there anybody that you didn't like as much that in this you love, or vice versa?
Raven and Beast Boy, I think, definitely look a lot more to my taste in this.
Yeah, I agree with John. I think those are the most prominent examples. I think part of the reason that it's kind of hard to compare is if you think of it, like in the comic book universe, all the characters in the new Teen Titans have established histories, you know, that are a factor in their character in their current storylines. We talk about, I mean, Robin coming out from underneath Batman's shadow was a huge theme in Judas Contract. That's why he becomes Nightwing at the end, you know, to move himself past being Robin. But I think it's kind of irrelevant in the cartoon. Does it even? I don't. At least in the episodes we watch, it doesn't come up that he was Batman's sidekick. I mean, everybody knows because. It's such a huge cultural, it's such a cultural thing in the United States, you know, for in pop culture.
Oh yeah, it's Batman and Robin. Everybody knows. But you're right. I don't think it was ever directly mentioned.
And Robin is such a confident, strong leader in this show that it's, you know, it doesn't occur to me, at least, to think, well, you know, he learned XYZ from Batman, blah, blah. He doesn't use batarangs. He has his own little throwing device and cool gadgets and stuff. So, you know, I guess that kind of leads my thinking to say I like this iteration of Robin better than the one that we read in Judas Contract, or the Tim Drake Robin we read in the New 52 Teen Titans. The cartoon Robin is somebody that I would follow. You know, he's strong, he's confident, and he's the one who helps lift. He directly helps lift Raven out of the literal pit, right?
Yeah.
So he's a more interesting character than the other two Robins that we read. That's not to say that those are bad characters, but I think my preference is for this Robin.
Yeah. He's cool here, but you're not beat over the head with it.
Yeah.
He's just got this confidence that comes from himself, and it's really neat to see that. I really like this Starfire. This kind of clueless but strong and confident character.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's willing to embarrass herself, and it doesn't matter, and the embarrassment's temporary, and then, oh yeah, I can shoot fucking laser beams from my eyes, so I don't give a shit. Like, get embarrassed, have that moment, and then she'll move on with it. And I like that she has that strength of character there. I also really like this Cyborg. I think he's cool.
Yeah.
I don't know much about his character, but I like that he built a fucking giant-ass cannon into the base of the tower that he plugs into.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was just cool. I don't have any other... No character reason. That was just I was like, yeah, fucking whoop some ass, Cyborg.
Another cool thing about him that's not in this episode is he actually builds a car. He builds something called the T-Car.
Yeah.
And it's like their little Titans SUV, except it's like it's themed after him.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
And it's a neat car, too.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
There's a bunch of scenes like him driving home in the car, like singing along to music.
I really like that all of the characters in this kind of just let their freak flags fly. Yeah. That was really hard to say. Like, there's a scene with Starfire at the end where they ask if she wants French toast, and she says, "Yes, I will eat it with gravy and the butter of peanuts." And I just love that, because I always saw her as being more like, you know, fun-loving but kind of sexy and, like, a bit more serious because she's a princess. And here she's just, like, she's a kid and she's fun and she's, like, she's the sort of kid I'd want to babysit or hang out with, although she'd probably end up babysitting me. But, like, everyone's so likable. And
oh, sorry, I just also thought of that scene with her and the pizza.
Yes.
And one thing I think is funny about this show in general is, it didn't occur to me until now why this makes sense, but Beast Boy's vegetarian, right?
Yeah.
And it only comes up a little bit in this episode with his tofu bacon. But now it makes sense to me why he's vegetarian. It's because he can be all those animals that he would potentially eat.
He wants tofu bacon because he's been a pig.
Yeah.
You know? He can be a cow. He doesn't want a hamburger. No, thank you.
But I never put that together until just now as we're talking about this stuff.
Well, and I think you also... I mean, when you read a comic, in one panel he's Beast Boy, and then you turn the page, and then the next panel he's a crow, or a Tyrannosaurus Rex, or whatever. And I think he's one of those characters that where maybe filling in the gutter doesn't happen naturally with your mind. Because I can kind of imagine what it's like for a boy to turn into a raven, but I've never seen that. You know, that's not a gutter I can fill in. Like, I can fill in action scenes. I've seen a dude punch another dude. I can fill that frame in. That's fine. I've never seen a boy turn into a pig. Mm-hmm. You know?
I hope not.
But, like, so you don't make that direct connection maybe when you're reading a comic, but you watch this cartoon and you see this boy turn into these things. You see him have the reaction when he is a bird getting caught in Trigun's hand.
Actually, there's a cool scene where he, right when they realize that they should be not fighting themselves, where it shows his transition from a spider back into Beast Boy.
Yeah.
And he has, like, 8 limbs, but he's got his normal torso and, like, 8 eyes, and it's all kind of, like, being pulled back into him, and he kind of bends up and turns back into himself. And that's I thought that was a really cool transition.
Yeah, so I think when you actually see that transition, it's easier for your brain to process the idea that this kid, who's really silly, actually was just that spider. Mm-hmm. And it's something that, like, you can't fill that in a comic book. If you haven't seen this cartoon, you don't have a concept for what that looks like. So that's something I probably got that connection to the comics because the first exposure I ever had to Teen Titans was this cartoon.
Yeah, me too. Like, I had never really read them before this. Or, I mean, I you know.
Before.
Yeah, I'd never read them before. I knew that they existed, but I never read any comics about them until after I had watched the cartoon.
So, speaking of differences between comic and cartoon... The main villain, the arch enemy of the Teen Titans, let's talk about Slade Wilson.
He had the best interaction in the entire 3 episodes. And I actually wanted to talk about this just because I felt it was so representative of who he is in this show compared to who he was in Judas Contract. In the part where he goes up to the door and the gatekeeper guy is guarding whatever power is going to turn Slade into a normal person again. The gatekeeper says something, and I don't actually remember what it was, but it was like, "You'll have to defeat me to get, you know, your body back, and that's not going to happen." And Slade's reaction is basically just like, whatever, and he starts attacking him. And we see some of that, like, kind of coolness and nonchalance in Judas Contract, but not near as much. He's actually, like, a lot more sardonic and, I think, comedic in the cartoon. And that makes sense, because in the comic he was just a creepy pedophile psychopath.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that was probably a pretty unfortunate spin on him, but I didn't expect that amount of humor from him here. And it's so dry, and I enjoyed that a lot, and it was completely unexpected.
Yeah, I think in the comic you get him first as soldier and villain, and then as mercenary second, right? When he's Deathstroke the Terminator in Judas Contract. But in this cartoon, as Slade, which is what they call him more than anything else,
he's, I don't think they call him Deathstroke at all.
I don't think they ever do. I think maybe Terra calls him that once or twice.
We heard it once.
Yeah, it's very rare that they call him that. They call him Slade, which is cool because that's a sick name. I'm down with that. But here he's mercenary first. And we get that a lot. He's like, I'm helping you because it fits my ends. I'm doing these things for me. Whereas even in Judas Contract, he wasn't doing the things he was doing for himself. I mean, maybe he was, but like he inherited his son's contract. Yeah. He did these things because he was a soldier and he was used to taking orders, and somebody stopped giving him orders, so he went out and found work where people gave him orders. You know, but here he's out just working for himself in this cartoon. And I think it's that different bend that makes it, like, maybe he's not as relatable, but it sure does open up his character. When you don't have to tie him down to his family background or his background in the military, he's just out there for himself. And, oh, I have to go by you to get my body, whatever. Either I get my body back or I die, so either way, I gotta fight you. Like, whatever, it doesn't matter. I need this for me. I'm going to go get it now.
So what about how he came in with the flaming axe and attacked Trigon?
He's fucking sick.
Did you guys also like really love that scene, or were you just more like neutral?
Oh, no, I think he's a complete badass in this whole comic. Yeah, he's just, everything about him, I think, is cool, especially compared to him in Judas Contract. I think he kind of, well, I think he's more sympathetic in Judas Contract because, you know, the whole part when he realizes Jericho's there and he kind of can, you know, he's like, oh, my son, and he wants to do the right thing by his son. But in the cartoon, he's just a badass. He even, like, the instance where he and Robin agree to work together to find Raven, Slade basically puts it out there. It's like, don't get used to this. I'm going to come after you when this is all over.
Yes.
As soon as I get my body back, and as soon as Trigon is gone, I'm still going to kill you.
Yeah.
And I think Robin even says something to a similar effect. Like, as soon as this is over, I'm going to try and get you in prison. Like, as soon as this is over, you don't have to tell me it's back on. I'm telling you it's back on, too. It's fine. I like that Robin gives it right back to him. That was a cool interaction with them down there.
But sorry, yeah. I totally took us away from the fighting Trigon part, so...
No, it's okay. I mean, I like that... And I think because he's out for himself, he can do these things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, he can go... He can do it for personal reasons. Like, I want revenge. A deal's a deal. I'm a mercenary. We had a deal. We had a contract between each other. And you broke your end of the deal. And what does a mercenary do when their contractor breaks the contract? Well... I'm good at killing people, so let's start there. And let's go straight for that. But yeah, I want to agree with what you wrote in the notes, David. This is sweet costume design.
Yeah, I love his
costume. He looks badass.
Like, his new Teen Titans one is kind of goofy with the orange and the blue.
And the big and,
like,
boots.
The tassel. I was going to say the frilly tassel boots.
Yeah.
And it gets better over time in the comics, but I think here...
This is the best.
Yeah, it's like it's not a sock helmet thing. It's like an actual helmet. He's got the, like, grate, little grate for his mouth. And, you know, the cartoon actually expresses a good amount of emotion through his one eye. Because when he first faces off against the guard, his eye gets really wide and stuff, and I thought it was really cool. And despite that, he's like always kind of monotone. Like everything about him just is, he's just mysterious, and he looks like a badass, and his voice is scary, and he's manipulative, and he's a good like leader. Because in other cartoons, he leads other villains. Mm-hmm. But when you get one-on-one with him, he's still a complete monster and badass. You know, just everything about him in this is super cool. He makes an excellent arch villain for this team. Yes.
He's very menacing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good way to describe menacing.
And I like the way his character is designed in this versus the show, or versus the comic book as well. Because in the comic book, he's a soldier, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in here, he's a mercenary, and there's a slight difference there, but I think it's more interesting here because he has a belt full of gadgets, or I guess it's more of like a shoulder holster slash belt kind of thing, but he has a thing full of gadgets.
Mm-hmm.
The dichotomy between him and Robin, there's a word for what foil? He is to Robin. Yeah, foil. God damn it.
Well, he's almost like, I think more even than just Robin, he's a dichotomy of Batman, which it's like almost Robin's fighting his mentor, the evil version of his mentor. Because, I mean, if you are familiar with comics and you watch this cartoon, you know that the later versions of Deathstroke, when he's very much removed from the new Teen Titans, he is a Batman-type character.
Yeah.
He can take on, he can like take on people that are a lot more powerful than him. I mean, there's that scene in Identity Crisis, one of my favorite scenes in comics, where he fights the Justice League.
Yeah,
and he just holds his own against all of them. It's fucking awesome. I love that scene. But yeah. So because he's more powerful than Robin, he's a better fighter. He's probably a better tactician, and so it's probably troublesome for Robin to fight this guy.
Well, yeah,
I mean, he's even got the utility belt, like you said.
Let's not forget, this is Teen Titans, and it's not even targeted towards a teen audience. It's targeted younger than that, let's be honest here. And he is the adult, and he's the one holding these, constantly pushing this group of kids down.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And if it's just Robin, he would flatten Robin. As trained as Robin is, he could squash Robin. But the important theme here is that Robin isn't pushing back on his own. Robin has a whole team of people that he's pushing back with. And it's that team, that support that they have for each other, that pushes back, that stabilizes all of them together. And I like that permeates the show, that idea that they hold each other up, and then they all push back against whatever problem they're facing. They do it together. And I know it's not the best scene in here, but it's done super overt when like Trigon separates their dark selves from them, and like has them, so they're all fighting their own demons, and then takes like, it was like the fight starts in one episode and ends in another before they finally figure out.
I think it's spread across all three episodes.
Is it all three?
It might be. It's at least two. And it's definitely two.
It's
and
at least
three
two.
At least, yeah.
Yeah, that scene did go on a little bit long, but. But it's. I mean, sometimes you do got to be overt with a theme that's that important in your show. I don't know.
I mean, the audience is kids. They might not like. I think we've seen enough things like that where we should, as adults, be like, okay, here's your solution. But
yeah,
kids need to figure it out along with the Titans, and then they get the moral.
That's
yeah,
true.
Yeah.
Plus, it's really fun to see Beast Boy fight one on one.
Yes, that was cool.
I'm going to fly above you, and then I'm going to turn into a hippo and fall on you.
I really liked Evil Starfire. She was mean. Oh, my God.
You know, if you should look up... So Starfire does have a sister who is an evil princess.
Is her name Blackfire or Darkfire? Something like that. That's
Darkfire.
Her...
Something along those lines, yeah. But yeah, she's basically Starfire's evil sister.
Doesn't she have an evil mom, too?
I don't know. I don't know about Starfire's mother.
I think her mom is like an evil queen too. Maybe I'm combining the two characters in my mind.
I don't know, but I know her sister is a terrible human being. And there's episodes, I think, of the show with her and her sister. That would be
Yeah, there is one episode. Or there's at least one episode.
Yeah, so there you go, Jen. Look that bad boy up.
Oh, Blackfyre. Her sister is Blackfyre. Oh.
Blackfyre.
Yeah, the queen that I was thinking of is actually her sister, who is later the queen.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, her name's terrible, her real name.
What is her real name?
It's Commander. It's KOMAND apostrophe R.
Coriander and Commander?
Yeah. It's...
Coriander's still worse.
I don't know.
Sometimes I call her Cilantro when I'm feeling like I don't like the comic.
Well, I mean, you could go that way. At least her sister's named Commander and not like Thyme or Sage or Rosemary.
At least Rosemary is an actual true name.
Yeah, except this Bailey. One would have like apostrophes Bailey. In it.
Yeah. They could put an apostrophe between Bay and Leaf.
Jalapeno. Yeah.
Oh god. So yeah, I don't, it's interesting. This is a three episode, or this is a three episode series. Yeah, it's a three episode series, and I don't know. I think this is short episode we're publishing, but I don't have a whole lot more to say on this.
Let me see. There was, I don't. So one complaint about this,
right.
And I was going to save it for my rating, but I'll bring it up now, is that it seemed longer than it needed to be. Yeah. But the reason I think it did is because that fight between the, Beast Boy, Cyborg, and Starfire versus their evil shadow creatures was spread out over the episodes. But like Jen said, the reason behind that was because, the kids need to, the younger audience of the show kind of needs to see the thought process and them figuring it out and stuff. So it's not even really a complaint. It's just something that kind of, like
as you're watching, you're okay.
Yeah. It's like, okay. Yeah. Cause but it's not like I'm not gonna knock the show for it.
Yeah, too much. It's just a matter of audience, you know. Like
yeah.
I think this show grapples with a lot of really cool themes, especially around Raven and her father, that are way maybe above the target audience for the show, but the show is still going to weave them in there, and I think that's really cool that they do that. But I don't think the show is going to get to the kind of moralistic dilemma themes that we got even with the conclusion to the Superman animated series with Darkseid, when he says, "I'm many things, but here I am God," and that whole idea of you can't beat him and what do you do and all that moral stuff there, mm-hmm. with the constant fight of good and evil, like that. This show, I don't think, could hit those notes and do it well. So I think, yeah, it's just a matter of audience and what the show can do, and how it needs to be paced for that audience. So yeah, let's go ahead and rate this bad boy then. Jen, how about you go first?
Okay, 4. Because I borrowed these 3 episodes from Lucas, and I'm going to go back and watch the rest, I think, from the beginning. Yeah. It was so fun. Completely, unexpectedly enjoyable. Because that's not usually a fault of most shows. That's my own personal preference. But I liked the little anime silliness vibes.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of get some of those tropes with the animation, the way eyes are shaped or facial expressions or weird lines indicating emotion. And that kind of caught me off guard and prepared me for thinking like, oh, maybe this is going to be different. And it was. I, like you said, they wove in ideas and themes that are above, like a target audience made of children. But that's good because I enjoyed it. And some of it I was kind of like, okay, you're dragging this out for the kids. But at the same time, a lot of it resonated. And I was like, I can understand why someone would be so upset for this reason, or why, you know, this person's having this emotional reaction. So it didn't strike me as cheesy or campy or goofy or childish. And I liked it a lot. So, yeah, I just really enjoyed this, and it was a lot of fun to watch, and I didn't feel like it, you know, ate up my time. I feel like it added to my day. So, 4 out of 5.
Cool. David?
Yeah, I'm also going to give it a 4. I think this is another excellent animated series by DC. You know, Batman, Superman, Justice League, Justice League Unlimited all follow in each other's footsteps because of the creative hand of Bruce Timm. And the audience is, it's for an older audience, and it definitely tips its hat to the comics very heavily. Mm-hmm. Teen Titans, on the other hand, is directed for a different audience. It too pulls from the cartoon. I mean, there's a series of episodes that follow the storyline with Terra, the whole Judas contract thing. But like those cartoons I mentioned as well, this show really, you know, is just done so well. It's such a quality cartoon, and you know, I'm really comfortable saying that as an adult. You know, not that I'm embarrassed by watching cartoons. I love cartoons. Mm. But this is a really good one, and I would recommend it to other adults. Maybe even if they don't like cartoons, but they enjoy comics, I'd say, you know, this is a good show. It's, if you like Teen Titans, you will like this. If you like comics, you'll like this. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't hesitate to let my son watch it when he's a bit older, you know?
Hell yeah.
So, yeah, it's just good. Like, there's a good message for kids, even though it's comics. I use people in the widest, most general term, tend to put comics down and comics related stuff. And, you know, we're lucky nowadays there's kind of a resurgence because Marvel's been knocking it out of the park with the movies. And I hope people go back and visit shows like this to see what they might have missed by writing this show off on, you know. So, yeah, 4 out of 5 easily.
Yeah.
It's a great cartoon.
Yeah, you know, you totally bring up the whole thing, how DC's been knocking it out of the park with the animated stuff for a long time, but Marvel's getting all the credit for the movies. And I think while the Marvel movies are really, really fun, as we've been going back and watching, like, select episodes from these animated shows, I'm like, yeah, those are good, fun, action-y movies, but they don't hit the moral dilemmas and themes, like, the heavy kind of philosophical stuff that these shows are willing to grapple with when they're targeted for kids. You know, this isn't a live action $100, $200, $300 million movie targeted to a massive audience of adults. This is targeted towards kids, and it's willing to grapple things like breaking the cycle of abuse and becoming your own person by purging your negative emotions and finding a new well of hope. Like, these kind of things that this kids show does it, and these other things that people like renowned better for whatever reason aren't willing to.
Yeah, and you know, we're talking about movies now, and I think one of the best comic book movies, and I include this with things like Avengers and Iron Man and stuff, is actually an animated movie that came out in the early 90s. I think a lot of people forget about, and that's Batman: Mask of the Phantasm.
Yeah,
that is a really, really good movie that's a spin-off from the Batman animated series, and I think maybe we should do an episode of that movie some point down the line. But
oh yeah, down.
It's a great, and I know I'm going a little off topic, but if you haven't seen that movie, you should find it and watch it because it's awesome.
Yeah,
it's just an excellent Batman story, and it's done by the same team that did the Batman animated series, so you know it's going to be. I don't even have to tell you it's going to be good. I just have to drop Bruce Timm's name, and you're like, shit, I'm going to go watch that right now.
That's pretty much how it works.
Yeah. DC has been at the animated game for a long time, and they have, you know, there's some are better than others, but I think in general, you can't really go wrong with the DC animated stuff. And the Teen Titans cartoon, just bringing it back around, is definitely up there with all those other ones.
Yep. So yeah, my rating, I'm going to go with a 4 as well. And just for me, I don't want to say it's because the intro is so awesome and that fucking sick song, but I'm pretty sure that's the majority of the reason that I'm giving it a 4. Is that awesome song. No, but seriously, because you, like, the first part of the first episode, I remember watching this when I was younger. And I come back, and I haven't watched any of the show in a long, long time. And I was watching that first, like, before the intro, bit, and they're like doing this thing with the pancakes, and Raven's being all hidden emo, and I'm like, this is stupid. She's obviously hiding something. Just fucking get on with it. God damn it, this is dumb. Stupid pancakes. And then the intro starts up, and the intro's like boppy and light and fun, but at the same time really cool and stylized. And it's just like, honestly, that really fucking sick intro is what sets up this show. Seems silly for me to put so much in the intro, but like, that intro, I think it's perfect for the show. And if you watch that intro and you like it and you bop along with the song, it puts you in the mood to watch the show. And once you're in the mood to watch the show and you're disarmed, like, all this stuff hits you and it's just great. So yeah, 4 for that fucking sick intro song. So that wraps up our Teen Titans series. Next week we're going to start a 4-episode series called Batman Morrison versus Miller. So these are like the two considered like two of the best writers of Batman stories. Mm-hmm. So we're going to look at both of them, some of their portfolio, and then we're going to compare. So we're going to start off with Grant Morrison. We're going to read Batman RIP. It's from 2008. It collects Batman 676 to 681. And then after that, we're going to read Batman Incorporated by Grant Morrison. And that collects Batman Incorporated 1 to 8 and the single issue thing, Batman Incorporated Leviathan Strikes. And then after those two Morrison episodes, we're going to switch to Frank Miller. And we're going to read Frank Miller's, like, probably career-defining piece, Dark Knight Returns, 4-issue miniseries from 1986. And then we're going to read The Dark Knight Strikes Again by Frank Miller that has mixed reviews, but, you know, read it and take what you will from it. A 3-issue miniseries, Dark Knight Strikes Again 1, 2, and 3. So yeah, Morrison versus Miller. Next week, Batman RIP. It's going to be good stuff. If you didn't catch all of that and you want to see it again laid out more visually for you, you can go to www.atomicpoweredsupercast.com. On the right, there's a button that says Future Shows. And if I haven't been lazy, there will be a little display of the 4 episodes coming up. There will be a link under each picture that says Amazon. Click on that bad boy. It'll take you to exactly the trade that we're going to be reading. If you think we could have picked a better author than Morrison or Miller to compare a Batman career, maybe you're a big Neil Adams boy.
Or you love Jeff Loeb.
Jeff Loeb, yeah. And I know Batman Odyssey is laughable, but straight up, a lot of people think Neil Adams is the definitive Batman artist.
True.
Yeah,
maybe not a great writer, but
we cracked some jokes about Batman Odyssey, but the guy has been around the Cape Crusader for a long time.
And there's a reason for it.
So if you think we picked wrong, send us an email and let us know at
AtomicPoweredSupercast@gmail.com.
Or you can let us know on social media, facebook.com/APSupercast, twitter.com/APSupercast, and I think APSupercast.tumblr.com.
Do we have a Tumblr?
I think I set one up and never posted a damn thing. So I guess we'll fix that this week because I just dropped it. Got to do it now.
I'll give you
posting rights. Jen, do you have a Tumblr?
Nope.
Not an account at all?
Nope. Sorry.
Okay, well, I ain't going to give you shit then.
Aww.
As always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Till next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.